thank you so much for joining.
Hi, I'm Lori, a compulsive overeater. Thank you for inviting me to speak tonight. I have, let's see, I'm a couple months short of 3 years of abstinence. Thank you. It's a miracle, and that comes after which I kind of call my 30-year relapse because I first was involved with Overeaters Anonymous in the early 90s. At that time, I was up to 250 pounds, which to me was the end of the world, not knowing that one day I would go up to 370 pounds, but it seemed like the end of the world. And all that. And I ended up in rehab, which used 12 steps. And in those days, there was no Zoom. So we were going to every kind of anonymous meeting there was. So it was very confusing for me. I came home. I had just gone through a divorce. I kind of divorced my mother for a year. After a year or two, I don't remember much about that OA experience other than walking into a room with six women, and one of them was thin, and I said, "Is this the right place?" And I don't remember much at all. I don't remember doing steps, having a sponsor, anything of that nature. And then I met the man of my dreams, and we married, and we started a family. And I said, "Oh, I don't need OA. I'm happy now. The weight will fall off." Another myth that we can fool ourselves with. But my looking back, food was my source of comfort in bad situations in particular. But I can remember my mom having me on diets from age 10 on. And I was always taking something in the evening when she couldn't see me up to my bed. And silly me, not thinking, I didn't want to get up and throw away whatever was there or take the bowl downstairs. So I started putting them all under my bed. And then one day, my mother decided to help me while I was away and cleaned my room. So that was a very, very, very difficult time to have to admit to not having a good relationship with food. My mother used to make treats after we'd gone to bed, and she started having to hide them in the cabinets so that we wouldn't eat them all for breakfast. I can remember as a youngster looking back. I could chug those Luden's cherry cough drops. So basically I was straight lining sugar without really understanding why that was so good to me. And as I grew a little older, my stepsister invited me to be a bridesmaid. But she lived out in California, and I don't know if they do this here now, but at that time they rented you could rent bridesmaids gowns, not just the tuxes, but they didn't have one my size. So it was very, very hard to admit that. And so I would just keep a smile on my face, and make the jokes before others did, that I'm eating this to keep my, how else will I keep this figure? Using humor to try to lessen the pain, get it out before they could hurt me. And then when the pandemic hit, my husband was near death from cancer. So with his death, with the pandemic and then his death and two sons moving back home to an adult children moving home, I knew that the energy it took for me to diet or to lose weight or to eat the right amount of food was so much that I'm like, I cannot possibly do that with all this going on in my life. So I gave myself full permission just to eat anything. It was like the reverse of everything else. And I just didn't worry about it until I did balloon up to 370 pounds. I had a wonderful, I kind of knew in the back of my head that OA was the right place to be, but I didn't want to do what OA wanted me to do, or at least I thought that. And I have a great therapist who, when she was recommended to me, I didn't even know she was a eating disorder specialist. That when I remember when she offered, she recommended I try OA. I said, no way, I'm not doing that. You know, that kind of extra emphasis when you're trying to convince yourself that it's the wrong thing. And I told her. It was 2 years later when I finally, in absolute desperation, looked up an OA meeting. The first one I went to was on the phone, and then another Zoom one. And when I told her that I had started back in OA, she was very happy for me. And I said, you know, I wanted you to ask me a second time. And she said to me, I have to be careful that I don't push you away. I said, I know, I'm that smart. I'm that smart that I can make my life miserable. And it's sometimes it's tough to be competent because when your life has been total people pleasing so that you can get the love you need and to make sure that they're not going to cast you out. It's very important to use all those strategies, and they're just damaging. So, the first month in OA, this final time, I think I cried every meeting. I cried when people said, "Welcome home." I cried when people said, "Keep coming back." I cried when people shared and I heard my story. I cried that there was a place where people were willing to say all these things about themselves, which I would be totally afraid to do any other place because it would mean people would ostracize me. It truly is the safe space that you need to, or I needed to do the work that's needing. You know, everyone told me all the time, you're eating your feelings. Stop eating your feelings. And I just was like, how? They said what, but never how. And that's what OA gave me was the how. And here I thought it was focusing on the food. I didn't know it was focusing on my spiritual connection to a higher power. And I've been religious all my life, and I have a very positive relationship with God. And I know that's a story you don't hear very often. But for some reason, there was this, I kind of look at it like one clogged artery between me and God that I wasn't able to open up until I was in OA and learned how to do it. Going through my first sponsor took me through the steps on through the big book. She had me go to a nutritionist first, and she said, I'm not going to tell you what you should eat. You need to work with a professional for that. But she took my food every day. And then she wanted me to do all these different things. And I'm like, how? I'm never going to have time. There's no way I can fit all this in. And of course, she kept saying, "Are you willing? Are you willing? Are you willing?" And I said, "Yeah." And now it's like I can't imagine how it's so important. It's like at the top of my list now to do these things instead of complaining about what I have to do and how I can help someone else in the process. How I can be of service. But that first step four, I didn't know what I was doing. And when I look back, all I did was write down the people who made me angry. But you know what? It gave me the start. It showed me all these places where resentment was buried. And once I learned that resentment, if I was doing my spiritual connection with God, I no longer needed to run the show. I mean, I think that was the biggest metaphor for me. I'm not the director. I'm not God. I don't run the show. I even used to try to run the show under the guise of niceness. Oh, I want to help you. I know what you should do. All these very what seemingly positive things. When you're a people pleaser and a perfectionist, these are well accepted social situations. People like to have those kind of people working for them or doing other things. And then when I learned that to procrastinate, and you got my three P's, those are my three major character defects, that when I learned that procrastination was just perfectionism acting out, since I couldn't be perfect, I wasn't going to start. Wow, what a waste of time and waste of th life. And so I went through the steps. That sponsor and I mutually parted after a few months. And I went to the September 2023 retreat at Malvern Retreat House from Page, Philadelphia Area Intergroup, and with the sole desire to find a sponsor. It's so hard. I couldn't begin to figure out how to do it on Zoom, and I at least had was zeroing in on three meetings that were really helping me spiritually and emotionally. And one is a smaller meeting. One's a meeting like this, and they do meet in person as well as online, but it's pretty far, so it's still hard for me to get to. I go about once a quarter. And the other two meetings are huge. They're like 100-person meetings. They're international, and they're just the meetings that spoke to me. And one of those is a 100-pounder meeting, which I did in my first year of OA and abstinence, shed 100 pounds. So I felt right at home at that meeting. So anyway, one of the things I just want to catch up here for you is that you would think that the most important thing to talk about is my weight loss, but it's not. That is like the secondary result of working the steps, in my opinion. And I found that all that step work brings me closer to not being the person trying to run the show. And in those cases, I can stop myself now. I can feel feelings now, and I can identify them. It's like, okay, I can stop eating my feelings once I know what they are. And the tools I have to keep doing to stop from doing that, who I can call, go to a meeting, do service, all these pieces. For example, my two adult sons live with me, and the younger one has been really helpful in he kind of takes a lot of responsibility for the house. He helps with the bills, and I thought I wanted to update my will, and I remembered my father telling me when I was his only living child that he had asked someone else to do it, his new brother-in-law, and I was really hurt. I never told him, of course, because I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to talk like that. But I thought, what, isn't your oldest child supposed to have that job? So one day my older son and I were in the car together, and and recovery's given me the ability to have these kind of conversations. And I said, You know what? I want to update my will, and usually the eldest child is often the executor. Is that something you would like to do? And he said, "No, Mom, but you know, he's no." He said, "I'll do that for you if you want, but I think my other son, he really likes that stuff. I think he'd be better." I was just like, I was, my heart was just beating it with so much joy that that I had treated him with respect, and I hadn't told him, "I'm doing this. I don't care what you think about it," or anything like that. And those things happen on a regular basis now, where I think they're gonna, I think I know what's best, and I have to stop myself. And that's all through recovery. And it's every time I do that, I feel the resentment leave, more and more resentment leave. Thank you, Mikey. So it just gets lighter. It gets lighter. My weight hasn't changed a lot in the last year, and I do hope it does eventually, but I realized that I was all these other things were going on, changes in my emotional life, changes in my spiritual life, also dealing with body image issues. I couldn't believe that I really didn't know the difference in my body, you know, plus or minus 100 pounds. I was just like, I see the same person in my mind. And it's so crazy. I'm like, wow, there's a lot to work there. I kind of liken it to an iceberg. I know a lot of people use the onion, but I like the iceberg because I feel like there's so much I don't even know is there. And I'm grateful because you can only handle so much at one time. But the parts that slowly melt and reveal what's underneath, that's happening. And that's what I can, and when I don't recognize it in myself, my sponsor tells me, and I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot. I do have to remember how different that things are for me now. So she and I have been going through the 12 steps with the OA literature. I thought that that would be something that would be helpful, especially for me as a sponsor. We're about at step 10 then. But I wanted to quickly now just share some of the befores and afters. You know, before I used to go into the Wawa and buy a dozen of individual different named items, and I would go up to the counter and they'd say, "Oh, someone's hungry." I go, "Oh no, I bought everyone their favorites. I had to lie to a stranger because I was so embarrassed." And then I would go in the car and I go, "I'm going to have one," and I would eat them all on the way home, and then I would have to hide the garbage so that no one would know, and I would find a way to either sneak it in outside or all this stuff. And now I can go into the store, I can use the ATM, I can get a coffee, I can do what I need to do, and it doesn't call to me anymore. And that's a really, really awesome thing. I don't have to use the handicap stall anymore. I can use a regular stall, so I do. I love to use a regular stall. And enjoy the fact that I have a more normal size, that's a bad word, the body that can fit into what others have decided is standard. What else? Let's see. I have some more here. You know, one time I knew I was a food addict. It was before I came back to OA, but a counselor said to me, "You know, your brother's dying of cancer, and you're going to go out to California to visit him. What's important?" And you know what I told him? I said, "I have to eat right. I can't have sugar, or I won't be sane." I knew that, but I still didn't want to connect in with. I couldn't ask for help. Help meant I wasn't perfect, and that was absolutely non-acceptable. Well, guys, I think that's the big stuff. I can't imagine anymore what I would do without OA. I don't want to ever do without OA. It is now like it's like breathing. Some things are changing, and some things sometimes there's some struggles, but I don't have to stop there. That's not the end. And I have I did find a sponsor. I must have interviewed 10 people, or talked with 10 people, and the one I got, I'm still with over 2 years now. I can't imagine doing this without her. So anyway, 10 steps are probably my favorite because that's every opportunity to not get my side of the street dirty again. I want to take care of it right away. So I kind of think that's my favorite step, whether I'm doing it alone, whether I'm doing it with someone I know, or sometimes with a stranger. That's the one that I'm like, good, I don't have to go back. I still got stuff to do, but I don't have to go back. Thanks for listening.
Lori, I want to.